It's Thursday, June 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the United States and China complete talks in Washington on a range of issues.
There's a big effort here to talk up the cooperation that the two countries are trying to make in a wide range of areas.
New York police continue their search for two missing convicts and will enjoy some New Orleans jazz. It's all ahead. As we heard in the news, the United States and China completed talks in Washington with promises to expand work on a range of key regional and global issues and to narrow differences on sensitive matters such as cybersecurity. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry called Wednesday's seventh round of the strategic and economic dialogue productive and significant, while his Chinese counterpart, State Councilor Yang Jiechi, said candid talks have led to broad consensus. Earlier at the White House, U.S. President Barack Obama and members of China's special representatives expressed agreement on climate negotiations, which will be held in Paris in December. I spoke with VOA's Beijing correspondent Bill Ide about the discussions in Washington. So basically, from Beijing's viewpoint, from Beijing where you are, what is seen about the talks? And also, how is the relationship between these two countries seen at currently?
Well, I think very much like in the United States, or at least from what we've heard from U.S. officials, there's a big effort here to talk up the cooperation that the two countries are trying to make in a wide range of areas, and to kind of downplay the challenges that the relationship faces. The more, you know, contentious issues from cyber attacks to the South China Seas. And we've seen in the run-up, or at least, you know, over the past month or so, there's been a lot of negative press in China about the United States, about its decisions, efforts in the region. But over the past few days, it's been more upbeat because of the meetings, trying to, I guess, set a tone for the meetings and what they are perceived to have accomplished, and also kind of to lay the groundwork for what is seen here as a very important visit of Xi Jinping to the United States in September.
Bill, what were some of the accomplishments? What were some of the accomplishments viewed as coming out of this meeting?
Well, one of the key things that they talked about, that had been talking about here, is climate change and how the two countries are finding ways to work together on that, what is perceived as a very crucial issue, given that the two countries are the biggest emitters of greenhouse gases. There has been a lot of talk in the media about an announcement that was made by China's climate change negotiator at the talks, where he talked about 40 trillion renminbi that China is going to put into that effort to help reduce greenhouse gases. But there was also discussion about the number itself, which is very large, and how officials are actually figuring out what that number is and how they come to that amount. Some are talking about how this is related to kind of energy adjustments that companies make, just figuring in, you know, the amount of money that they're kind of putting into it, not necessarily figures that the government would actually inject into efforts to make progress on climate change. Overall, though, it's a lot of the talk has also been on the relationship itself and where it's heading. The Global Times published an editorial today about the relationship itself and whether the two sides can afford a breakup in the relationship. And the reason why they wrote that is because there are, you know, growing concerns among analysts in the United States about the relationship and how the two sides talk about things and talk past each other, maybe some would say related to some issues, but yet don't seem to reach any kind of concrete tangible conclusions, be it on cybersecurity or South China Seas or human rights. And so the Global Times was kind of arguing, of course, that no, the two sides can't afford to have a breakup because of the importance of the relationship. So I at the same time, I think there's a lot of discussion, a lot of thought here about the relationship and where it's heading. And that's what we're trying to look at here is where the two sides are going. Can they sustain this relationship in its current state, given the contentious issues that are, some might say, on the fringes that continue to persistently nag the relationship? Or can they find a way through these continual talks and meetings to keep pressing on and moving forward?
All right. Well, thanks very much, Bill.
You're welcome.
That is Bill Ide in Beijing. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pulshevsky with a look at what's trending today. So, Andrew, what's happening?
Well, we're hearing word out of Kobani, Syria, of an attack this morning by the Islamic State group. So hashtag Kobani has been trending on social media. But what's interesting about this story is that there's immediate allegations from Kurdish groups that Turkey is involved. They're saying that Turkey is behind this because they want to tamp down the Kurds and have them not take over more territory. So hashtag terrorist Turkey has also been trending out of this attack. And it's been interesting. It was the top trending topic globally on Twitter this morning. You had one side saying Turkey is implicit in this attack, calling from them to be removed from NATO. You have the other side saying, how could Turkey be involved if they're dealing with so many refugees, taking in so many refugees? So this debate is going back and forth. We're seeing it play out on social media this morning. Hmm. Another social media hashtag we're seeing trending, hashtag taxi. There's a series of protests by taxi drivers in France over Uber, which is a car service. They're protesting that and saying that it's taking their jobs. And what's interesting about
we've had those in this country as well.
Exactly. It's been worldwide these car services come about. And what's interesting about this is the other trending topic coming out of this is Courtney Love. Now, this is a singer. She's the wife of the late singer Kurt Cobain. She was in Paris and I guess was in an Uber and was attacked by these taxi drivers. They threw eggs at her car. And she tweeted out, that Paris was like Baghdad, that she'd be actually safer in Baghdad than Paris, which, of course, caused another controversy, which is why her name is trending. Many people on Twitter saying, okay, if she thinks it's better in Baghdad, let's start a fund to send her there. So she's not getting a lot of love on Twitter this morning because of her comments. And then finally, another hashtag from the entertainment world, hashtag 6 years without Michael Jackson. Today is the six-year anniversary of his untimely death, so people are taking to social media, sharing their tributes, photos from his concerts, different memories of his songs, song lyrics. So a nice tribute to him on social media this morning.
Yeah, and I bet there'll be a lot of his songs will be aired today on radio and television.
Absolutely, and I'm sure a lot of people, I wouldn't be surprised if on the streaming music services that his songs pop to the top of those lists today.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pulshevsky. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
A new study by researchers at the UK's University of Exeter finds that today's racehorses are running faster than their ancestors. The new finding contradicts previous studies that indicated the speed of the racehorse has leveled off. The UK researchers say that those past studies used smaller and more selective samples and didn't include factors such as ground softness. The British researchers analyzed a large data set of racing records that gave a more detailed overview of thoroughbred performance from the mid-1800s until 2012. The data analysis shows that race-winning speeds have greatly improved since 1850 and that the biggest increases in speed were found in shorter distance races. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll get to hear some New Orleans jazz. A second employee at a prison in the northeastern U.S. state of New York is under arrest in connection with the escape of two convicted killers who remain on the loose after nearly 3 weeks. For more, we're joined by Adam Phillips in New York. Well, Adam, the drama continues in this story about the two prison escapees from the Clinton Correctional Facility. I believe a second employee has now been arrested in connection with this escape.
That's true, Sarah. Gene Palmer is a guard at the prison who's been charged with two felony counts of promoting, one of promoting prison contraband, and the other is tampering with physical evidence, along with a misdemeanor of official misconduct. Apparently, Joyce Mitchell, the woman who has been charged with a serious crime of actually abetting and giving hacksaw blades to these guys in the prison tailor shop, had given him some hamburger meat, this Gene Palmer, without putting it through the metal detector, and he put it in the freezer, or somebody put it in the freezer of that prison shop, and then he conveyed it to the prisoners. Now, both Joyce Mitchell and he are saying that he didn't realize that there were hacksaw blades and drill bits and that kind of thing in the meat, but just giving food at all that's not allowed to prisoners is contraband itself, and he's in deep, deep hot water. He's also alleged to have traded art supplies that he bought in a local craft shop in exchange for art from one of the prisoners, and he supposedly burned it and buried it, you know, the ashes, after the prisoners escaped.
Yeah, all of this sounds very much against prison regulations.
Oh, yes. I mean, you're not allowed to give prisoners anything at all that isn't completely according to the rule book. And also he allowed access, apparently, officials say, to the catwalk where they escaped from in order to allow one of them to fix the electrical box that fed his cell. So, yes, this is not good. He's denying that he helped them escape, but I'm not sure that he's denying passing the hamburger meat. He said he made a mistake.
Well, meanwhile, the search for these two convicts continues. How is that going?
Well, they have hard evidence that DNA evidence that they stopped off in this hunting cabin. There was a bloody sock that they found there, and that's where they got the DNA from. It could be anything from an injury from the, you know, hugely wild and unforgiving forest and wilderness around the area, or it could just be something as little as a blister, but it is hard evidence that they stayed there. The downside is, I guess it's all a downside, is that it's a hunting cabin, and in that area of the state, people leave shotguns and all kinds of ammunition in the hunting cabin, you know, against their future hunting trips, and so it's very possible that they took some guns. Somebody reported a shotgun was missing. The wrinkle on that aspect of things is that this hunting cabin was used by a lot of correction officers from the prison. So it's unknown at this point whether the prisoners just heard them talking about the hunting cabin that they used or whether they were actually tipped off that they should go there.
Well, meanwhile, people that live around that area must be very concerned.
Oh, yes, they're very, very concerned. They don't know where they are. They could be anywhere. I mean, there have been allegations of sightings of these people, and so they're quite scared. On the other hand, the place is just crawling with police officers all over the place, so they feel safe from that point of view. And also, it's real gun country, so a lot of people are armed to the teeth, even though, of course, they don't want the situation.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Adam.
You're welcome very much, Sarah.
That's Adam Phillips in New York. This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
And now we'll have a kind of trip down memory lane to hear a type of music that's old but still new and vibrant as ever. Here's VOA's Steve Norman.
It's the time of the year when communities all over the world hold jazz festivals, and that's what's been happening in the U.S. city of New Orleans, Louisiana, where what's called Dixieland Jazz got its origin. You always hear a lot of Dixieland in New Orleans, where there is something for everyone who loves live music. That's right, it's Chicago, the rock band from the 1970s and 80s. Groups from almost all genres, somehow or another, make their way to New Orleans for the festival. To the New Orleans scene is country and bluegrass band Allison Krauss and Union Station. Finish up with some traditional New Orleans jazz from Tuba Skinny. Thank you.
some of the sounds from the New Orleans Jazz Festival, which takes place every year. It's a wonderful event. I've been a couple of times. I once went for VOA. I covered it back in 1993, I think. And then again, I went in 1996. But it's a great time. A cousin of mine who lives in Missouri, he and his family go just about every year. They have performers from all over the country and also some from all over the world. So if you happen to be in New Orleans in May, check it out. It's really worth your time. Well, also, please look at our website. You can access it at voanews.com. We're also on Twitter. We have a new Twitter account here for this program. It's at VOA_IE for International Edition. I also have a Twitter site myself, which is VOA Williams. So please check all of that out. Well, we're coming to the end now of our show. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks very much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Speaking at a panel on the sidelines of the 29th session of the United Nations Human Rights Council in Geneva, U.S. Special Coordinator for Tibetan Issues, Sarah Sewell, called on members of the council to join the United States in encouraging the Chinese government to live up to its international obligations to respect Tibetans' distinct culture, identity, and fundamental human rights. Special Coordinator Sewell spoke of the barriers and challenges facing the Tibetan people. Citing the State Department's human rights report on Tibet, she noted that the Chinese government engaged in the severe repression of Tibet's religious, cultural, and linguistic heritage by, among other means, strictly curtailing the civil rights of China's ethnic Tibetan population, including the freedoms of speech, religion, association, assembly, and movement. In response to the international community's concern over the Chinese government's actions in Tibet, China has responded with additional tightening of its already strict controls on Tibetans' fundamental freedoms. Chinese authorities have also taken actions to denigrate the Dalai Lama, whose views, said Dr. Sewell, are widely reflected within Tibetan society, and who the U.S. believes can be a constructive partner for China in addressing continuing tensions in Tibetan areas. The United States has consistently urged the Chinese government to uphold its international commitments to protect human rights and fundamental freedoms, specifically by ending the harassment, detention, and other mistreatment of individuals who seek to peacefully practice their religion, express their views, or seek legal redress. The United States, Dr. Sewell said, calls on Chinese authorities to release Tibetan Buddhist teacher Tenzin Delak Rinpoche and other prisoners of conscience, and to allow Tibetan filmmaker Dundup Wangchen to be reunited with his family. Like any people, said U.S. Special Coordinator for Tibetan Issues Sewell, Tibetans have an inalienable right to be stewards of their unique cultural, religious, and linguistic heritage. They have a right to do so without interference, in peace, and with dignity.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.